Thank you, ma'am. I open the House Committee on Health Care for this session, the final session we have to work on first chamber bills. Let me announce, I am not going to open a work session on House Bill 4070, but what I will do is get the executive directors of several of the boards to get together in the interim and come back with a proposal in 2015 about how to deal with the extent to which issues can be expunged from their websites or from other things and bring us back a more integrated proposal. I think it would be useful if the associations that are here as well, the professional associations, get into that discussion, and I'll ask them to manage it themselves. But I think there's a legitimate question of how good conduct might be rewarded by expunging some information downstream, but I'd like all the boards to be doing it the same way. It would seem to be useful. So I won't open a work session. Did you want to comment?
Mr. Chair, if I could comment on that. Is it going to be just expunging or also posting? Because I believe that, in my experience, there are some issues with things perhaps being posted, and there should be some thought given to that issue as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, and there's, in spite of the fact that we actually worked on what ought to be posted in the past, it hasn't necessarily worked its way into the operation. So, 4070 will rest in peace. I'm going to open a...
Can I pass you this note?
I was assuming that.
Okay.
I'm going to open the first public hearing on House Bill 4110. And the intention, as I said, is not to move the dash two amendments, but what my intention when I get to a work session is to move the dash three amendments and then move the bill to Rules Committee for further work. So we'll be opening that work session only for the purpose of moving the bill to the Rules Committee. So
get double screwed.
We have alleged counsel to help us here. Ms. Freeman, there she is. Could you join us and explain what the Dash 3 Amendment is? And also, you've issued a legal opinion on this issue as well. Is that right? Could you talk to us about that? Then we'll take some other testimony.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, Lori Freeman from the Office of Legislative Counsel. The Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 4110 limit the applicability to people who are incarcerated pending disposition charges. So once they are convicted, then they're no longer, their coverage need no longer be extended to them. But if it's pending disposition of charges and they have insurance, it has to cover it has to cover the services provided to them in the jail. I may or may not have done a legal opinion on it, and I cannot tell you whether I did.
I'm sorry. I didn't warn you on that. Okay, well, then you don't have to comment on it.
I can say, though, that under the Affordable Care Act, while there's an exemption from the health insurance mandate for people who are incarcerated after the disposition of charges, that is not true for people who are incarcerated pending disposition of charges. So anyone who is in that situation has to have insurance. Insurers have to issue insurance to anybody who applies for it. And if the services are any of the essential health benefits, then they have to be covered.
Essentially, the issue, it seems to me, and we'll get some testimony as we hear about it, but it seems to me the issue is right now, if she and I are arrested on the same day, charged with the same offense, she, being rich, can post a bond and come out. Her health insurance will remain in force. I, being a poor, humble academic, can't post bond, and therefore my health insurance...
Can we object to the chair making some wild categorizing and wild generalizations?
that my health insurance might not cover things that I'm paying a premium for, while hers, because she was able to make bail will. Is that essentially the circumstance now?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's my understanding, is that most insurance policies have a term in them that would exempt from coverage any services provided while someone is incarcerated. But it's not in the law, but it's usually in the terms of the contract.
Okay, thank you very much. Who we got? So you call the first panel?
Okay.
Let's try and keep it sort of brief. There's some quiet issue coming at 3 o'clock in this room about the Columbia River Crossing Bill that there are some other people are interested in, so we have to be out of this hearing on time today.
Craig Roberts, Jason Myers, Drew Brosh.
I was told you were asked to testify because uniforms and press committees in the legislature.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, he's from Clackamas County, and he is impressive.
With or without a uniform. Thank you, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick and members of the House Committee on Health Care. My name is Craig Roberts. I'm sheriff of Clackamas County, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. I'm here today to support House Bill 4110. This measure will give relief to our taxpayers that incur the cost of inmate medical care and to our overburdened jails that are struggling to keep beds open and services that we need to fund. Just to give you an idea, in Clackamas County, we house 463 inmates. And just here a few statistics from Clackamas County for the fiscal year 2012-2013. We spend 11.5% of our budget, that's $2.2 million, on inmate medical care. This accounted for nearly 50,000 health care visits to our jail medical department. In addition, we had 233 inmates receive medical care outside the jail, which resulted in nearly $500,000 cost to the taxpayers of Clackamas County. These expenses occurred even though 49% of the people booked into our jail already have some form of health care insurance. So due to the ongoing medical expenses that we've had to endure, the Clackamas County Jail has not been able to open. We have 26 jail beds that are closed. We have 12 set aside for mental health beds. It's our goal to try and open those. And we've been trying to do that since 2002. We've also had to reduce some other programs as a result of the increase in health care costs, such as our GED programs, our parenting life skill classes. All of these are contributing factors that have been proven to help reduce recidivism. But we have to put inmate medical health care first. So we're seeing some trends in our jail population. I just want to mention real quickly that our population is much older, which means that they're in greater need of health care services than we've seen in the past. And the folks that we're taking care of in jail, just like you and I, require regular health care. I wanted to point out just another trend that we're seeing in the reduction, and that has to do with the reduction of mental health services in our community. The reduction in that area forced individuals really into our correction facilities, and many of these individuals actually have low criminality offenses that they're in there for, but they're high mental health needs within our facilities and are very, very expensive. These require really costly interventions and stabilizations to help these individuals get stabilized. And we really are serving oftentimes as mental health institutions. So in conclusion, just from my testimony, I believe it's really unacceptable that insurance companies are allowed to deny reimbursements to inmates in our custody, which really does shift the health care cost to the taxpayers and citizens in our county. So I just ask you to please join me and some of my fellow sheriffs in supporting this important legislation.
Do you feel all right with the Dash 3 amendments? At least restricted at this time to the pre-adjudicated cases.
I have not had a chance to review that yet, so I wouldn't. Maybe one of the other sheriffs could comment on that.
I haven't had a chance. For the record, I'm Jason Myers, Marion County Sheriff and Chair. I haven't had a chance to review those Dash 3 amendments. You said it would apply only to pre-adjudicated
inmates. Yes, it would start by applying only to the pre-adjudicated inmates.
I think anything would help us.
You want to testify? You want to keep talking? You introduce yourself.
Sure. For the record, I'm Jason Myers, Marion County Sheriff. I think Sheriff Roberts did a really great job of outlining the issues that we have in our local jails. I would just add, with our situation, what we've seen over the last two fiscal years, we've watched medical costs just skyrocket. Just over last year was a 10% increase in our medical costs alone. And my budget isn't increasing. It's actually staying flat, and I'm in a good position. There are a lot of counties where it's decreasing, and so what that means is as those costs go up, we have to look at other services like patrol deputies or jail beds that we have to reduce in order to provide these services. So any help that we can get for reimbursement saves taxpayer money, and it allows us to provide as much service possible to the citizens of our counties.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and Vice Chair. I'm Drew Brosh. I'm the Chief Deputy at the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office in Portland. I've been a certified corrections officer for 25 years. I spent most of those years in operations and have a lot of experience. I just want to talk to you for a minute about my personal experience with this issue. For many years working in the jail, I escorted inmates to medical appointments, dental appointments, eye appointments, dialysis, orthoscopic, everything that you could expect the healthcare system provides. I also learned early on that sheriffs are responsible constitutionally to provide a level of care similar to what covered people would get on the outside of the jail under the Eighth Amendment. I've also been a transport officer for many years where I transported inmates to emergency rooms because of assaults in the jail, because of illnesses pre-existing, required use of force, just a myriad of reasons and issues that come up. And I tell you that so that you understand that when an arrested person comes to jail, they aren't necessarily stabilized into a position where they have less medical needs. Sometimes, because of both the constitutional requirements and because of the condition they've come in, their medical needs are just then getting addressed. I think there's a couple reasons for that. I think one is drug-affected inmates over long-term. Portland, the Portland jail system was part of a study by the Office of the National Drug Control Policy for many years. We're one of 10 cities, and those tests confirmed that almost 70, in over 70% of the time, people that were put in the jail were under the influence of drugs or alcohol. I think you've all seen or are familiar with the long-term effects of some of these drugs on the street, in particular because of the dosage issues that we're seeing, even deaths from that. Another area is mental health. We estimate in our system that 20% of our inmates have an Access 1 or 2 diagnosis. Another 20% have another mental health affected issue. That's 4 out of 10 inmates in our jail. Our jail population is 1,310 currently. I've spent the majority, as I said, the majority of my career in operations, but the last couple of years I've been the Chief Deputy for the Business Services Division, so it's my job to look at costs. I understand that in my county, our Corrections Health Department spends $3.1 million on care outside of the jail, $1.6 million in pharmaceuticals, and the health department itself, the Corrections Health that delivers our health care in the jails, is a $14 million program. And it seems to me that when we have a system that exists where we have inmates in our jails that are already covered, we ought to be able to access some of that relief, because those costs go against vital programs that not only the sheriff's office but the county as large needs. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions to this panel?
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Representative Thompson and Representative...
You mentioned 70% of your population approximately is drug or alcohol addicted.
Oh, affected. Affected. Tested okay. positive. Okay.
Under the Affordable Care Act, that's now been put into primary care. Are you having any discussions? This is a little bit off point, but I think it's part of the problem. Any discussions about how you're going to provide drug and alcohol programs for that? I mean, I'm assuming 50% of your people don't have insurance. 70% of that 50% are going to be the drug and alcohol people as well. Any discussions going on about how you're going to deal with that as a primary health care issue?
The discussions I've been involved in just preliminarily talk about the connection between people that receive services from county health both in and outside the jail. We do have some programs in our jails that we have volunteers come in for AA and for NA and for some other programmatic issues. We are working to begin to get people signed up for Cover Oregon that come into the jails, connecting with them so that there's more of a continuity of care. Those are the discussions at this point.
The reason I bring this up is I'm sympathetic to the problem, obviously, but I think maybe this bill doesn't go far enough in that we have a much larger problem when we implement health care reform. We need a comprehensive health care way to address health care in our jail system, because I think a lot of these kinds of cases are going to become really expensive when they come in under the mandates, and you will be held accountable for providing a certain level of treatment to those people. And we may want to look at something more comprehensive than just grabbing the insurance when it exists.
I think that's true. I certainly agree. Representative Conger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for, really it's for all three of you, but it came out of Sheriff Roberts' testimony. I may have heard you wrong. Did you say 49% of people who are incarcerated in your county jail or jails have health insurance?
Yes.
That surprises me. Are you including Medicaid or Medicare, or is that private insurance?
I'd have to look back at the numbers, but it might include Medicare or Medicaid. I think that the other thing I wanted to point out, too, I mean, we're working really closely with Health, Housing, and Human Services, and our goal is really kind of a transitional project to get folks signed up for health care, those that aren't, and doing that along with able to provide them some of these drug and alcohol programs that they normally wouldn't have access mm-hmm. to. So, yes.
And may I follow up? I don't think it changes the value of this bill. I think I understand why we would send it to rules, because it sounds like there's a private contract issue that we would have to accommodate, so that the bill wouldn't rewrite existing private contracts. But it does make some sense to me for people who haven't been convicted and are incarcerated that they would still, you know, their insurers would still provide insurance from a public policy perspective. What I was stunned about is the numbers that you were throwing out. And again, Sheriff Roberts, I think you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, about 11% of your budget goes for inmate medical services. First of all, I wondered from the other two if you know off the top of your head what that looks like for your organizations. And second, I just want to put in the record, that's a stunning mm-hmm. number.
It sure is.
Representative Conger, members of the committee, my percentage would be very similar around budget and how much we spend on medical. I didn't pull that number, but just off the top of my head, we're in the 10 to 11% range of what we spend in medical costs. As far as insured individuals, I think my number is going to be a lot lower than that. We have not pulled that specific question. We do every 2 years we do a jail study looking at our offender population and the drivers for incarceration, and that is a question I'm going to add to my survey to dig a little deeper. But I would venture to guess our percentage would be a lot lower than that.
For Multnomah County, health department provides the medical services, so that budget goes to a different department, but that number would be upwards of 10%, 10.5 of relative.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Oh. I just wanted to clarify for private insurance. 10% would be private insurance.
No, I think 10% was the amount of their budget that goes toward inmate medicals.
Right, the general fund for our total budget, if you took the health department's budget, what they paid for the medical services, it would be just a little more than 10% of our.
Do you contract with them so you actually pay out of your budget, or they pay out of their?
They pay out of their budget. They get general fund allocation. We get general fund allocation.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would you call the next panel, please?
Sure. Claudia Black, Nancy Griffith, Mike MacArthur.
And after that, the panel after that will be?
On deck will be Jessica Adamson, Lisa Trussell, Elise Brown.
Every county on the state. Wow. Very similar. More in the urban centers.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlake, members of the committee. I'm Mike MacArthur, Executive Director of the Association of Oregon Counties. I submitted to you a letter in support of this bill, House Bill 4110. I'd like to make one slight amendment to my letter. Since I've seen the -3 amendments, I would make three instead of we support the -3 amendments that you'll be considering today and perhaps moving on to rules. AOC is very much in support of this bill. It makes sense to us. Jail costs, as you heard, are a big driver of county jail expenses. We're having an awful tough time maintaining jails throughout the state. You may have heard Columbia is going to close their jail on June 30th this year. Curry County is likely to be in that same situation soon. Josephine is running at very bare bones, Coos, Klamath. Those counties are very much struggling to maintain their jails. Jail inmate health care is a big cost driver. And if we could eliminate this unfair situation, it would make a whole lot of sense to help drive down those costs. Remove the exclusion is what we're talking about here. I mean, it seems to me that there's kind of an absurd situation where if I were a county employee covered by a private plan that provided this insurance that had the exclusion and I got thrown in jail, the county would have to continue to cover me based on my employment agreement, and then the county would be paying for my health care as well, twice. So it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. So I hope you'll
try and stay out of jail.
Yeah.
Well, we will, too.
Not me.
Mr. Chair, I recommend that you move this bill along to rules so that the technical problems can be solved, and I hope we can get this done. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll go next. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Claudia Black, and I'm here today representing Multnomah County. And thank you for the opportunity to testify on 4110. I don't want to be too redundant, but I want to let you know kind of the history of this. It builds on Senate Bill 457A with the -5 amendments from the 2013 session. And as you've heard, it would require insurers to pay for health care that's provided to people who have coverage and are incarcerated in county jails. So it's kind of a mouthful. There's a change in this bill from 457A with the -5 amendments. This change is that it only applies to those inmates who are pre-adjudication. And as you've heard from Ms. Freeman, the ACA prohibits discrimination against inmates who are awaiting trial. So this would line it up with the provisions of the ACA. Currently, as you will hear, most, if not all, insurers have exclusions in their policies for folks that are incarcerated. That means, as you've heard from Mr. MacArthur, that they, when premiums continue to be paid, that the cost shift is to the taxpayers rather than the folks that are getting paid to pay for the services. It gets a little complicated again. So this concept would remedy the cost shift by requiring health insurers to continue to pay for health care for the insured population, whether that care is provided in the community or in jail, for the pre-adjudication piece. During the 2013 session, a work group was convened that included insurers, county sheriffs, and advocates, and it was led by the Senate Health Care Committee staff. Thank you, Ms. Teal-Circa. And they identified, the insurers had identified several issues that they felt like legislation needed to address or certain obstacles that they saw. And in this bill, most, if not all of them, are included. And those are that insurers can deny coverage for the treatment of injuries resulting from a violation, like a physical violation, basically a crime, that they may impose utilization controls, including requirements for pre-authorization, the same as they would have for all covered lives. that they may also deny coverage for diagnostic tests or health examinations that are required of all inmates. So if they test every inmate for HIV, then that would not be covered. So I think we went quite a long way to try to address some of their concerns. I know that they still are not in support of the bill, but I just wanted to put on the record that we did make as many concessions and still, you know, keep with the intent of the bill. So we feel very strongly that requiring counties to pay for health care for inmates who have private health care insurance is neither a good use of taxpayer dollars nor a good public policy. Thank you for your attention, and I'd like to introduce Nancy Griffith. She's the head of health services for Multnomah County Jail, and I think she'll be able to, in addition to providing testimony, answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and other commissioners, or of the representatives. My name is Nancy Griffith, and I am the Corrections Health Director in Multnomah County. I oversee the health care services provided in our two county jails and the one juvenile detention facility. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. We strongly support House Bill 4110 with the Dash 3 amendments. As you've heard, if we pass the bill, the county would bill insurance for inmates who are covered by private insurance. In Multnomah County, about 9% of the 35,000 inmates we book every year have private health insurance. If we are able to bill private health insurance, that's a savings for the county, Multnomah County, of about $1 million. Health insurance exists to pay for health services for the insured individual, and health services we provide in the jail are no different than the health services received outside of the jail. Approximately 9% of the care that is delivered in the jail would be considered maintenance and or preventative care. For example, medication management, chronic care monitoring, and disease prevention. We hire nurses, doctors, dentists, mental health staff who have the same experience, credentials, and ability to improve care as in any other county clinics or hospitals. These services would be paid for in the community and should be paid for when provided in the jail. If this bill were to pass, the Multnomah County Health Department would work with individual insurance companies to qualify the corrections health providers and the services provided to the clients to ensure they meet the standards required of the insurance company. I'm available to answer any technical questions you might have about the bill and any of them in the Multnomah County system. Thank you for your support of the bill.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
Just for clarification, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the $1 million savings on the base bill or the Dash 3? And if it's on the base bill, do you have any estimate for the Dash 3 savings?
Is that for just the pre-adjudicated piece? It's the $1 million savings?
Yes, it's just for the pre-adjudicated, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Administrator.
Jessica Adamson, Lisa Trussell, Elise Brown.
There's one more witness after this?
Yes, sir. And that would be Cheryl Ramirez.
You go first, please.
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Elise Brown for AHIP, America's Health Insurance Plans. Thanks for letting us be here to offer some comments this afternoon on House Bill 4110. And up front, I do want to say that I haven't had a chance to completely review the Dash 3, so I can't be real specific in my comments to you this afternoon on that. But as you recall, a couple times during the last regular session, I sat before this committee and talked more explicitly about the affordable care and recognition of what constitutes a new mandate. And just a reminder again, today the ACA has been very clear that states need to defray the cost of any new mandates enacted by the legislature after January 1, 2012. So while there's a difference of opinion on whether or not this is a new mandate, I would say that it's not covered today, it's not an acknowledged benefit today, and therefore it's a new mandate. So while that is the case from our standpoint, we are and have been very sensitive to the issues that the counties and the sheriffs are facing today and the rising cost of health care. It's ugly for all of us. We did participate in the discussions during last session through Senate Bill 457, and although the bill died, the conversation certainly did not. As was mentioned, Senator Steiner Hayward pulled together a group, and we all participated. And the goal really was to come out with some outside-the-box options, those that wouldn't tap private insurance to pay for this. And we did have a meeting. Most all the stakeholders participated, but we didn't get a chance to execute on any of the potential ideas because the committee ceased to exist after that first meeting, so disappointing. But I would like to have a couple of our my AHIP members chime in on some of the ideas that were at least suggested, and we didn't get any further on that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lisa Trussell with HealthNet Health Plan of Oregon, and here in opposition to House Bill 4110. As Elise alluded to, there was, we understood to be an interim work group and working on ideas that went beyond just eliminating the exclusion from commercial carriers that are typical in our contracts that say if you're under the if you're incarcerated or under the government's control physically, then your policy isn't going to cover those things. And as was mentioned earlier, there is a it's our my understanding that providing health care is a requirement in the Constitution for people that have inmates. But that being said, so when the work group was forming, one of the things that, you know, I had been talking about was pooling them in a manner that's similar to OEB or PEB, where you have you hire a third-party administrator like AOC or somebody to administer negotiating with providers, getting the network, and running it through that with perhaps a reinsurance element at the top. And that was never discussed beyond the hearings previously when it was mentioned under Senate Bill 457. The other thing is that I'm familiar in California with inmate care, not for the county jails, but for the prison population, because in California, the company I work for happens to have the contract where we administer the health care benefits for the correctional system for the prisons. But there were other ideas, those are just two that were possibilities on how to address the cost within the jails. And again, as Elise said, there was one meeting. That one meeting, I was in Olympia at the time and couldn't attend, but was waiting for the follow-up and the to-dos to be done, and that never occurred. There was never another meeting. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jessica Adams, and I'm here today on behalf of Providence Health and Services. We, too, are here regrettably in opposition to this bill. We share, as my colleagues have said, the kind of sympathy for the counties and their position. We appreciate, as members of the community, as employers in the community, the strain that counties are under. However, this bill, as has been mentioned, is not a consensus product. It started out the end of last session and into the interim as an opportunity to have a conversation, something that we had hoped would lead to options that would assist the counties as well as work for plans. Unfortunately, that has not transpired, and that is unfortunate today, which is why we're here in opposition. As you know, talked with all of you, Providence has great commitment to transformation and coordination of care, whether through our health plan or on our delivery side. And we are concerned about any new measure that would reduce that kind of coordination that's important as part of the delivery of health care and health insurance.
not being able to coordinate with providers, with the folks that are incarcerated is not helpful in the long term to these patients. And so, again, for the many reasons that have already been stated by my colleagues and, again, on coordination, we are, again, regrettably in opposition to this bill.
Yes.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. If there's not a quick answer to this, you can say there's not a quick answer to it. But I'd just like to understand the basis for the exclusion.
Yeah, if there's not a quick answer, don't give a long
one. Yeah, don't give a long one. For the exclusion, and I'm just talking in reference to those people that have not been convicted. They've been arrested and they're being retained until the case is adjudicated. I'm trying to understand, so what's the basis under which they would not be covered? I'm trying to understand the exclusion basis. What was it based on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lively, I think that there is at least one older insurance lobbyist in the building, probably in the room, who may have the answer for that. But I would assume it has something to do with the fact that the care was supposed to be provided by whoever was detaining them.
Thank you.
Question?
I just have a brief question. Can you clarify for me whether the premiums are continuing to be paid while service is not delivered, both if they're an individual and if they're part of a family package?
Representative Greenlick and Representative Kimmy Geyer, boy, that's a tongue twister for me. The answer to that is it depends. It's not that they're buying a product that should provide them a service while they're incarcerated, because their policy will clearly state if there's an exclusion, along with a lot of other things that are excluded, that's an exclusion. So if it's an individual policy and parents are paying, perhaps. If it's an employer, an individual who is insured within a group plan, depends on what the employer's policy is about having people absent from work, if they count that as a leave of absence or not. But so it varies. It may be paid. My guess is that it wouldn't
under this
be,
bill, it wouldn't be impacted in order for this to be enforced.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just wondering now, when you withhold services, do you still collect a premium?
No.
Yeah.
Make sure. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, Representative Widener has a question.
So, Representative Widener?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one baffles me a little bit, too, and Representative Geyer kind of hit on it a little bit, but I want to kind of take it to auto insurance, because let's say I was arrested and my car is sitting out on the street and it gets hit and I'm paying the premiums, but I'm in jail. Would not my auto insurance still cover my car, or am I excluded because I'm in jail on my auto insurance? Because if you're paying your premiums, you still should cover the person no matter where they're at.
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, I think if your auto insurance policy does not exclude coverage based upon whether you're in jail or not, and it doesn't say that up front, then it shouldn't make a difference. This is not unlike life insurance, and we think about it perhaps in that context. Life insurance pays out if you are passed away, but if there are certain causes of your death, you aren't covered. Your insurance policy does not pay out. And you know that up front. That's disclosed to you and is a known known reality.
I didn't know that till this bill came forward. I would assume I would have still had my insurance if I went to jail. They didn't tell me that when I got my insurance. So it wasn't a conversation.
Mr. Chairman, it's very important that you read your policy. And that tells me that you have not read your policy.
Yeah, well, frequently in a group you don't have the policy. In fact, the policy is in the group's hands and not in individual's hands. So he may be a part of group insurance, for example, here.
Oh, whatever we have
would
here.
Not, he would not have the master policy in his possession. So in fact,
you owe
it. It isn't true. Guys, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have two more Cheryl Ramirez. Cheryl Ramirez and Mr. Fuller wanted to join us. Briefly, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. I will be very brief because there were some comments made about a meeting that was held during the interim, and I attended that meeting. And if you look at OLIS, the first information that's listed there under Fuller D, County Budgets, was the battery of questions that Senator Steiner Hayward and the insurance companies asked of the sheriffs as we were to move forward. So I want to let you know that information was collected, and it is provided to you, where we talked about a lot of different things. Under the Affordable Care Act, you're covered by your parents' insurance if you're under 26. So we looked at what percentage of our population was under 26, what percentage of our population had veterans benefits and Medicaid and Medicare. And so we culled as much of that data we could, anticipating additional meetings, which never occurred, which we're disappointed about as well. That doesn't change the fact that we're continuing to pay an incredible amount of money for health care when people are in jail who have premiums, who are pre-adjudicated. So we're continuing to move forward on this legislation because it's really significant. And while that committee, when we sat together for the first and only time, talked about trying to find solutions outside the box, because everybody's interested in that, I don't want you left with the impression that that was the only thing we discussed or that it was limited just to we're going to look for solutions that don't include insurance covering their insured, because that has always been our objective. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Maris.
Good afternoon, Representative Greenlink, members of the committee. I'm Cheryl Ramirez, the director of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs. I'm testifying in support of House Bill 4110 with the Dash 3 amendments on behalf of community mental health program directors and directors of health and human services departments of counties. And because I'm the last person testifying, I'll just pick a few points that I haven't heard yet. First, in response to the question about insurance coverage, we conducted a statewide survey of county jails in August, September of 2013, and we found that an average of 8% of the inmates have private insurance. So the vast number of inmates have no insurance. As you know, with ACA, both in terms of Medicaid expansion and the health insurance exchanges, most of these inmates actually should be covered. Nationally, they project that about a third of the inmates will be covered by private insurance once they enroll in the health insurance exchanges. So that'll increase dramatically from the 8% average there is now in Oregon. The range of coverage among the different counties, as you've heard, some higher percentages, it's from 0 to 20% among the counties. And I'd be glad to give you more information on that survey if you'd like. So as a representative of community mental health programs, of course, we're especially concerned about all of those inmates with mental illnesses and substance use disorders. They make up about two-thirds of the county jail prison or county jail population. Concerning the pretrial detainees, that's about 60% of the county jail population. So we're really talking about the majority of inmates in county jail who are pretrial. One question we asked on our survey, too, was the length of stay of pretrial detainees. On average, it's only about 14 days. So a disruption in their insurance coverage can cause their health to get poor outcomes for their health, and of course it increases the cost to the communities, the county departments, and the various others that provide services for these people who have disrupted care. They're much more likely to recycle back into jail if they don't get the care that they need, and of course there are just higher costs all around. Also, I wanted to mention, and I think this has been mentioned briefly by legal counsel, that mental health and substance use disorder care are two of the covered essential health benefits under the ACA, so this would be included. I think that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Thank you, guys.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, yes.
I wonder if we could have Ms. Freeman come back for a moment. I'd like to ask a question, if I may.
Well, let's do a work session.
That would be fine.
That close a public hearing on House Bill 4110. and open a work session in House 4110 and ask our council to join us.
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
Thank you.
Go for it.
Welcome back. I was intrigued. Ms. Brown talked about the implementation of potentially a new mandate under federal law, which is prohibited after, 2012, I guess. I wanted to know if you had information about that and if you think this would constitute such a mandate and would therefore not be valid.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kenemer, just going off the top of my head, there are certain things that are not considered to be new mandates. And let me back up a little and say they're not prohibited. It's just that a state that chooses to implement a new mandate has to come up with the money for it. But there are things that are exempt. For example, if it's an essential health benefit, it's one of the things that have been considered an essential health benefit either by HHS or in this interim process where they're using benchmarks. Just because a state later adopts it, it doesn't turn it into a new mandate. So as the one person testified, mental health treatment, which is an essential health benefit, requiring coverage of that would not be a new mandate. Furthermore, until HHS comes up with a definitive list of mandates, they allowed each state to come up with a benchmark plan, and Oregon chose, I think it was a Pacific Source, but I'm not sure, plan. And so any of the things that were covered under that plan, again, if they were provided to an incarcerated person pre-adjudication, then it would not be considered a new mandate. In terms of coverage of other things that aren't essential health benefits, that I would have to research. I don't have off the top of my head the language of the Affordable Care Act where they talk about the requirements regarding new mandates, but I'd be happy to get back to you on that.
We're very disappointed. We thought you had memorized all those pieces. Thank you. Representative Thompson, do you have a motion for us?
Can I make a brief comment before that?
Okay.
That is, I am really disturbed by this bill as symptomatic of something that we're doing this session that we're going to regret. And that's moving complicated bills through this short session where we don't have all the answers and we haven't had time to really vet them. And we're going to do something down the road that's going to have consequences. And this is a perfect example among others. And I really have a problem with doing this, although I'll probably support moving it to rules. We need to have some very serious discussions because this bill or this type of bill in the future will be saved for a short session where you can ram a complicated bill through in 1 month or take a chance on that, because there isn't time to vet it and ask all the questions. And this is not a bill that we should be doing in a short session. Having said that.
Actually, Vice Chair Thompson, this is pretty minor compared to Cover Oregon.
That's why we're only taking off a small piece of Cover Oregon. Exactly why.
Well, Mr. Chair,
I think we move on.
Introduce the session. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Mr. Thompson, you have the floor.
You want the motion?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the -3 amendments to House Bill 4110.
Dated
2/11/14.
Mr. Thompson moves the -3 amendments dated 2/11/14 to House Bill 4110. 4110, yes. Is there discussion on the amendment? Was somebody down here? Okay. Any objection to the amendment? It's included in the bill. Another motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4110, dated 2/11/14, as amended, with the -3 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and add a subsequent referral to the House Committee on Rules.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 4110 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the House Committee on Rules. Any discussion on the amendment? I mean on the motion. Yes.
Just say to echo a little bit, but much more briefly and articulately, Representative Thompson's comments. You know, I do think this is complicated, and I don't think it's ready to pass today. But I knowing that we have a very, very truncated schedule in the short session, and knowing that this is a very real problem for the sheriffs, I'm willing to vote for the motion to move it to rules in the hope that what will happen is that with the additional time and the extraordinarily insightful oversight of the Rules Committee, the problems with the bill will be worked out, and that we can end up with a bill on the House floor that is that has reached that proper compromise and balance so that it's actually going to work. So with that said, I will vote for the moving the bill today. I won't vote for it on the floor if it hasn't evolved.
It's in this form. Kenemar?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Weiner. Chair. As a member of the Rules Committee, I'm tempted to vote against this.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a discussion we've got to have, and I do fear it's probably more complicated than it may at first appear, so even more complicated.
So I
thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, everybody's kind of said it. This is a complicated issue. And one of the things kind of strikes me, normally mandates, I'm totally against any sort of mandate whatsoever that comes out of here. But I strongly feel if I'm paying my premiums, it's kind of like a court-appointed attorney. I don't want one. I want my own attorney. And same thing, if I have my own insurance, I want to use my own insurance, have my own doctor. And if I'm paying my premiums, you know, I feel like that should be there. Most people don't know what's in the plans because when you get it, it's this thick and nobody reads the real fine print on the bottom. It's the same thing when you're buying a software program or anything else. You look at this and it just gets to where you're numbed after a while and you just say, I agree. And as of today, I didn't know that those plans wouldn't cover you, but I don't want to leave the insurance companies hanging out there because they should have the ability to cancel a policy on someone. You know what, if this guy keeps going to jail all the time, we're not going to cover him. And unfortunately, with what's happening with a lot of the stuff that's going on in healthcare, they don't have the ability to just drop somebody like that. But there needs to be a way for them to drop the stick to say, hey, if you're going to be out there doing bad things and get arrested, you're going to lose your insurance or you're going to lose some of this stuff. Because people need to know there's consequences for their actions. So I'm torn on this.
Well, I mean, it seems to me it's a matter of equity, is my comment. I just think this is, I don't see how you can differentiate between people who are able to make bail and people who aren't able to make bail. So, I mean, I could understand if the insurance companies wanted to say anybody that was arrested, whether they were convicted or not, before they were tried, they're dropped from health insurance. Because that's what we're saying to the people that can't make bail. I don't think you'd want that to happen, would you?
No, well, it'd be after the things were done or the next renewal. We're not going to renew the policy with them. So,
whether or not
there's
they're
a lot
jail.
Of yeah. I mean, there's
and
a lot of things.
Whether or not they're guilty.
Right. Well, it depends upon all that those factors. But I mean, we're covering some of them. But it, like I say, this is going to be more complex than what we're just doing here today.
Okay.
So. Well, I would just say I appreciate the spirit of compromise. It's now down to the pre-adjudicated. They've not been found guilty. And all of the additional requirements because of being in the jails that are over and above what they would be if they were outside the jails is not included. So I do appreciate the compromise that's gone into this already.
Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
No. Representative Wigley?
Aye.
Representative
Wigner? Aye.
Representative Klim?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Kenemar?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenwood?
Aye. House Bill 4110 as amended moves to the Rules Committee. I've been asked to have a brief recess for the minority members. Wait a minute. For the minority members to have a brief caucus. I'd like the majority members to hang in if we can.
We're in recess.
Did you gavel your other
room? We're in recess. work session on House Bill 4154 and recognize Representative Kenny Geyer.
Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 12 amendments to House Bill 4154, dated 2/11/14.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves to adopt the Dash 12 amendments to House Bill 4154, dated 2/11/14. We have a note from the LC describing that, and I've asked the administrator to read that note.
Okay. Mr. Chair, it's dated February 12th. Dear Representative Greenlick, the Dash 12 amendments combine the Dash 2, the Dash 8, and the Dash 10 amendments. The Dash 2 and 8 amendments make wordsmithing changes requested by the Oregon Health Authority. The Dash 2's and 8's amendments also modify the original language of Section 1 to say that the authority should request federal approval to allow folks to get premium tax credits or cost-sharing reductions regardless of whether they had the assistance of an insurance producer. Bullet 2, modify the definition of reinsurance-eligible individual for the reinsurance program to qualify an enrollee who applied for coverage during open enrollment, regardless of whether the individual actually enrolled during the open enrollment period. Bullet 3, tie the coinsurance rates, reinsurance caps, and attachment points in the state reinsurance program to the federal program, which is now in flux, so insurers don't get double payments. Bullet 4 allows the authority to administer the temporary medical assistance program, medical insurance program, TMIP, to be overseen by the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool Board rather than requiring the OMIP board to administer the program. Bullet 5 allows the authority to use the premium tax ending balance and monies in the OMIP fund to pay for the TMIP program. The Dash 10 Amendment sunsets the changes to ORS 741-025 to restrict the governor's authority to remove more than three board members within a four-year period, beginning July 1, 2015. Signed, Lori Freeman.
Thank you. The Dash 12s are the only amendments that I intend to approve to move to add to the bill before we move it to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion on the Dash 12s?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
So there's a lot of good things in here, but these are the only ones that you're going to let us vote on, is what you're telling us, or the Dash 12?
The only one I intend to move. The only one I intend to approve.
So the other amendments, even if they get the votes, you're not going to let them move? Is that what you're saying?
They get to a vote, they get to a vote.
We may stay self-insured, frankly.
So.
I think we should find it cheaply.
Is there any objection to the Dash 12s?
That's a good question.
Dash 12s are part of the bill.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I move the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 4154.
What's the date?
They're 2/7/14.
Senator Weiler moves the Dash 6 amendments dated
2/7/14.
Is there any discussion on the Dash 6 amendments? Would you call the roll?
Representative
Plam?
Aye.
Dash 6 amendments.
Representative
Conger? Aye.
Representative Parker?
No.
Representative Kenner? Aye. Representative Lightley? No. Representative Whitener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
No.
Vice
Chair
Thompson?
Aye.
Chair
Greer?
No. The motion failed.
Oh, we're on 12, sorry there.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 9 amendments.
Widener's moving
to House Bill 4154.
Dash 9, what date is that?
Okay. Those are also 2/7/14 for the date.
Senator Widener moves the Dash 9 amendments to House Bill 4154, dated 2/7/14.
Mr. Chair, can we have...
These are the amendments, sir, where I'd asked for an audit. I mean, it's not a federal audit, but it's asking for the Secretary of State to actually start the audit within 12 months rather than, or 6 months rather than 12 months, and then 12 months rather than 24 months for the performance audit. So just moving the timeline up on that.
Any other discussion? Would you call the roll, please, on the dash?
Nine
amendments.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
No.
Representative Kinnamer?
Aye.
Representative Whiteley?
No.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Representative Klim?
No.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
No.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Green?
No. Motion fails.
Jimmy, you want to do yours?
Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, we have additional amendments. Do you want to go?
14.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 7 amendments to House Bill 4154.
Do you have a date on that?
February
7th, 2014. 7th, 14. Mr. Conger moves the dash 7 amendments to House Bill 4154 to 2714. Is there any discussion?
May I describe it for the committee?
Sure. Thank you.
This would require the health insurance exchange to post on their website or provide to any person requesting the findings of any independent review, investigation, or audit of Cover Oregon if it is paid for by the exchange or by the Oregon Health Authority. The goal here being to start to try to restore public's trust in the state and in Cover Oregon, and to hold the agency accountable to us and to the public.
Is there any other discussion? You call the roll, please.
Representative Kinnamer?
Aye.
Representative Whiteley?
No.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Representative Klim?
No.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
No.
Vice Chair Lee Geyer?
No.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenland?
No. Motion fails. Is there any other discussion?
I have two more. Mr. Chair, I move the dash 14 amendments to House Bill 4154, and they are dated February 11th, 2014.
Mr. Conger moves the dash 14 amendments dated 2/11/14. To House Bill 4154. Is there any discussion?
Do we have a summary again? I think that's helpful.
I'd be happy to do that.
Are we talking about dash 14?
Dash 14. Yeah, dash 14.
Go ahead.
Shall I summarize? This would require that the Executive Director of Cover Oregon come before the House and Senate Committee on Healthcare to provide an updated business plan that includes demographic information on enrollees and structural changes necessary to make the program self-sustaining. The point being that there's this issue of the sustainability of Cover Oregon and the nature of the risk pool of current enrollees plus the projections of future enrollees, and we don't have that information right now, even as we're considering reforms to Cover Oregon to try to correct the course. So,
the information I expect we're going to get, but I don't think we need it in the statute. Is there any other discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would disagree with your comment there, because we haven't got straight answers out of them when they've come before us every time, and if they actually had it written out in a plan that was open for us to review and the public to review, it would bring some accountability to the process. And I think that's what we're trying to get with the amendments that we're moving here, is some accountability, because there's been so much money spent and nobody knows where it's going or how it's being used. And I think these amendments are an excellent idea that are being brought forth, and I'm very supportive of them.
Any other discussion on the dash 14s? Would you call the roll, please, on the dash 14s?
Representative Whiteley?
No.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Representative Penn?
No.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Kinnamer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
No.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenlee?
No.
Hold on.
Wait. She forgot.
I'm sorry.
Who did?
I got skipped.
She forgot.
Aww.
Representative Parker, I'm sorry.
No.
poor baby.
He's a lame duck, so we kind of advance
this.
No
to the amendment
months.
Or no to apology.
Mr. Chair, may I make another motion?
Please.
One more. I move the Dash 15 amendments to House Bill 4154. They are dated February 12th, 2014.
Members of Congress moves the Dash 15 amendments to House Bill 4154, dated 2/12/14. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, could we again have an explanation?
Yep.
Thank you.
My pleasure. This is my favorite amendment. This amendment would end Cover Oregon and require the governor, and I know this one's going to have a different vote pattern. This one, I think, has a chance.
Wait, you got a chance.
But this one might have less than four no votes. I mean, yes votes.
It would require that the governor request a federal waiver that would allow the state's poor and uninsured to buy directly from insurers without going through the health insurance exchange and still be eligible to receive federal subsidies. At this point, the reason I'm bringing this forward is this obviously is something that I believe is better policy than continuing something that we don't know will succeed ultimately. And I've tried to make that clear. What I'm motivated by. I'm also pretty distressed that we've asked for information about the governor's efforts to obtain a waiver, and we have not gotten. Oh well, we did get a reply that was a non-reply that supplied absolutely none of the information that we requested, and it's on OLIS if anybody hasn't seen it. I feel like we're operating in the dark here, and. Therefore, I urge your aye vote on this amendment.
Any other discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Whitener?
Aye.
Representative Klim?
No.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
No.
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative
Whiteley?
No.
I'm
a
computer guy.
Vice Chair
Kinney
Geyer?
No.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
No. The motion fails. Can we have a motion on the bill as amended with the dash 12s?
Chair, I move to move House Bill 4154 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves House Bill 4154 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation, that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. I do want to say that these amendments came up really fairly late, and some of them were clearly, I think, honest attempts to improve where we are with this project. I think this bill, as it's amended, does do some of that. It takes care of some of the important business. There are several other bills, including one, for example, in the Committee on Consumer Protection that has some of these protections for all new IT projects, which will do exactly what was required here. That will require audits, overview of those with information to places that can help. I do believe we have had in the past the business plans, and we will have as of next week in this committee an updated business plan. It was taken today to the Finance Committee of Cover Oregon, and it will go to the board tomorrow. I hope we'll have a hearing on it in the next session to find out where we are with that. We obviously need that information. We need people before us who can give us the definitive information that we need to help them move forward. I think this bill is an improvement. I would urge its passage to Ways and Means where it can be. I'm certain it will not come out of Ways and Means, and the form is going in, that there'll be more work done. This is a serious business. I didn't mean to take lightly the amendments that were being offered. I know they were serious amendments that is an attempt to improve this process. We're all worried about it, as is the governor and the administration, and at least that's my reading of where they are, and we have a lot of work to do to make this work so the citizens of Oregon can get affordable and effective health insurance coverage. So I would urge you to vote yes on this bill. I think it will be a help. What have we got? Mr. Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your comments. I guess my concern is, given the substantial nature and size of the train wreck of Cover Oregon, I think this bill is deficient of some important things. And it's better than nothing. And with that, I guess I'm willing to support it, but I think there's a lot more that needs to be done, and I appreciated your comments. And
absolutely.
Let me just end it there. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Representative Conger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really just echo Representative Kenemer's comments. You know, I appreciate what you said. These amendments were serious. I think that they would have been improvements to the bill, and I understand there's disagreement about that. Unfortunately, I came out on the losing end of that deal. But I think the bill that we have before us does not do enough. When I think about the waiver period, for example, and I've really tried to zero in on where did April 30th come from, and what makes us think that in the extra 30 days, the extra 50 days from now, that something dramatic will have changed that will change the whole picture, which is still one of significant failure and significant hardship on Oregonians. And so while I understand, again, how the vote went down and accept defeat gracefully, I really think we need to do more and act more decisively, and perhaps when we get the information we have a little bit more light shed on what exactly is going on and what the prospects are for the eventual success or failure of Cover Oregon, perhaps we'll be better able to pass some of the amendments that I suggested.
Representative Clement?
We're on the -12s, right?
No. The bill.
As amended. So definitely I'm going to support the bill. You know, I looked again at the relating clause to see if I could bring an amendment regarding getting a public option in here. That they told me I couldn't down at LC because it relates to insurance plans, and I have, generally speaking, some heartburn with insurance plans these days. So I self-insurance, that thing we did the other day, that looked pretty good. Someday I hope we can talk about getting a public option on the exchange, but not today, obviously. I don't want to be out of order. But otherwise, I think this is... I think it's important. I really, want to give some credit to Representative Conger, to Representative Fagan, to the governor, on the issue of letting people get their tax credits, whether they were on the exchange or not. I mean, that's just something you have to do. Even if it's a great theory to have people go through the exchange, when it blows up, it's not their fault. You've got to fix it somehow. This is the best way that we've got to fix it. Hopefully the feds will say yes. Maybe we got to go back there and have a little talk with them. But I think it's important for Oregonians, this bill.
Person Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill, I mean, very supportive of the extension and stuff, what Representative Fagan brought forward. I don't think it's enough time. And I think we need to look at what we did, because this actually affected, well, my staff's mother was on one of these plans that got canceled. Well, we found a plan for her, but she's paying like $300-$400 more a month now than what she was paying. That's how much it went up. So this affected my office directly. I wish we could have gotten some oversight in here, because I'm very upset of what's went on. You've seen it reported. We've seen it all over the news, and it's either gross negligence or incompetence, one or the other. And until we get an outside party that doesn't answer to the executive branch auditing the books, what's happened with the money and what's went on, and bring professionals in here to do this and not hand-picked governor staff, I think we would be in much better shape. So I wish we would have adopted a few of these amendments and moved them along. But I will be supporting this bill out of the committee into Ways and Means.
Representative Kenny Geyer. Representative Thompson.
I think it's pretty obvious from the amendments and further discussion on this process that we have a lot of disagreement and unhappiness over where we are with this bill. And echoing Representative Widener's remarks, it's really easy to lose track of the fact that there are a lot of Oregonians out there that are left in limbo. I would hope that out of this process we can bring together enough people from the legislative and executive branches, sit down around a big round table and figure out what went wrong. For instance, this afternoon I got a call from a lady who, an elderly lady who had signed up for the health care plan, but she can't keep her doctor. She went back and found out a way she can keep her doctor. She just needs to sign up for another plan that has pediatric dental insurance in it. She doesn't have any children. But that's, I mean, come on, this doesn't make any sense, guys. And this is what consumers are putting up with. We need to have a very transparent way to look at where we are, how we got here, and what the way out is. And frankly, I think there's a lot of politics being played and maybe some hide the blame. But we're past that. The Oregonians want to know what's going on. They have a right to know. And they have a right to get what we told them originally we would deliver. And we didn't do it.
No. I do want to make a couple of comments and close. Oh, somebody else? I will. Just two comments in closing. One is, we did hear from the governor earlier today, and he is waiting for us. He is waiting for a report from an independent group that he's hired to bring in and find out what happened. That will be a public report. We'll have that in front of us. The other thing is. Yeah, I think it's by next month.
End of March.
Yeah. I'm hoping this is the March he was talking about.
It is.
No, March. I did ask that question.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think is really important for us to remember is we've enrolled, as of this morning, more than 220,000 people in health insurance in this state. We've reduced the uninsured rate in this state by 25%. Almost 100,000 of them came through the Care Oregon portal. I mean, that is
Cover
a...
Oregon.
I mean, the Cover Oregon portal. That's been a much maligned system, but we have put 100,000 people, about 35,000 of those into the private health insurance market, about 65,000 of those into the Oregon Health Plan, with a total of 180,000 people into the health plan. That's a remarkable achievement, and we can bang on Care Oregon for their failures, and God knows there's enough blame to go around, including some of us, I'm afraid. But the fact is, that is an amazing achievement, and I think we need to recognize and honor that. The whole purpose of this thing is to get people into health insurance in one form or another. And I think we'll be satisfied with what happens when we get done, when we get around to January 1st of 2015 and see the results of whenever we finish this time and next year's open enrollment period. So if there's no further discussion, can we have a roll call, please? You can even include Harker in this one.
Representative Harker.
Aye.
Representative Kinnemer.
Aye.
Representative Wiley.
Aye.
Representative
Wiley. Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
And Chair Greenlee.
Aye. Motion carries, and House Bill 4154 is off to the tender mercies of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any, there are no bills carried over?
No.
None? We're done with the first chamber bills, and as a reward, we get Friday off. So
right.
There won't be a committee meeting on. Thank you all for your hard work and your discipline.
Yeah.
We are adjourned.
Nice.